The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
A lot of people get into business because of a good trade they have.
Right.
They've never really had any experience at running or running a business. So yeah, they're running in the business for years, their head's down, they're working in the weeds, and then suddenly they're, you know, they're older, they're tired because they've been working in the business so much.
And then
they try and figure out how they exit. Whereas if you just treat it almost like, well, this is a, you know, a means to an end. And you know, and I think that's where I learned along the way when I had my business, is that I didn't know enough about business. So I was
right. That was my
next
happy question
to,
for you. Yeah.
I was happy to reduce, you know, to throw away my ego and say, hey, I need help with.
Right. You wanted to learn everything,
expert.
Right?
I that's part of the reason why I joined the EO, the Entrepreneurs Organization, because I wanted to lean on people who'd been doing it for a while.
Did you join that when you had the landscaping company?
Early on. Yeah, I've
yeah.
been a part of that group now for 12 years.
Yeah.
And again, it was instrumental with how I looked at my business.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Yeah, Robert Klinkenbeard. I'm with the Rylex Group, so now living in Greenville, South Carolina. I have been in the States now for 21 years, originally from Edinburgh, Scotland. I had a large commercial landscape company, which we grew to nearly 400 employees. I sold that business in 2016, and now do coaching for multiple different clients across the US and Canada. So super excited to be here.
All right, Robert. So thanks so much for agreeing to come on the show. I think maybe a publicist connected us, or...
Yeah, I have an agent that helps to, you know, find me shows. So
Got it. Yeah, a lot of them find me. I guess they're out there looking for shows and doing searches and stuff. But I was interested to connect because not only does this make my podcast international, but I know that you've started businesses, sold businesses, done different things, and you're pretty active in entrepreneurs organizations. So I love all the, you know, EO and Vistage and the alternative board and all that kind of stuff. But let's go back to, like, you know, when you're growing up, where you're educated, what your background is, and kind of how you got to all the entrepreneur stuff you do today.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm happy to share that. So, you know, I grew up in Edinburgh, Scotland, and, you know, had a pretty normal, you know, childhood. Did okay at school, not great. Right. But I was really passionate about sports. I was a big footballer, soccer player. Mm-hmm. And then moved into played a bunch of rugby. You know, rugby is just such a great sport. And then
it's like football with no pads.
No football, right? No pads, no helmets. Yeah, pretty soft sport.
Crazy stuff. Yeah, exactly.
And, left school. I went to Landscape and Recreation College in a place called Ayr in Scotland. Okay. I got my degree across there. And then moved into working with the city, the local government, and grew within that space and became a grounds manager, parks manager, looking after 300-400 employees.
Was that what your degree was in? Like outdoor?
Yeah,
outdoor
recreation management, looking after sports fields, outdoor spaces. In fact, including, I hate saying it, but I looked after a bunch of cemeteries as well, which was
that's outdoor groundskeeping, right?
Yeah, yeah. Very interesting. Yeah. And then I just got fed up with, the weather was pretty rough in Scotland. I mean, it's a beautiful place, but I think it rained a lot before I moved
here. I'm sure.
And there wasn't a great deal of opportunities for me. So right. I just started to look at what options were out there.
Okay.
And, continue on. I actually went through a divorce back in 98. And that was obviously a pretty rough time for me. So my friends persuaded me to move across to the States. So I actually went across to Scottsdale, Arizona in December of 98. And, I just had such a fantastic time between the weather, the outdoor sports, and I started looking and thinking, it's a beautiful place.
That's where, my sister went to Arizona State. So that's over in that area, right?
Yeah. Beautiful place. Yeah. And, I started.
But it gets hot in the summer. I mean, we were there for graduation and it was like May. You couldn't be outside unless you're like in a pool of water up to your chest. It was so hot.
Oh, it's brutal. I just got back the last 3 or 4 days. I've been there and it was 114, 117.
Ooh.
And just unbelievable. You're even at night, overnight is, in the 99, 97.
Yeah.
So
they say it's a dry heat, but I don't know if he's climbing a pizza oven. That's dry too.
Oh, totally an oven. So it's pretty tough, especially when it starts, when the summer wears on in July, August.
Right. Plus your blood is Scottish. You grew up in that environment.
Totally white. I'm just a white boy who's, just turned red rather than, a different color.
Right. So. Yeah. You're just used to different climates. Hey, you grow up in Arizona. They don't think it's so hot. But it's like we go to Fargo and it's really cold. That's what you're used to.
I mean, I definitely prefer the sun, compared to Scotland, because you can wake up and you could do most things, barbecues and planning doing stuff outdoors.
Yeah, but, sure.
I think while I was there, I just thought I caught my eye is that it was all these beautiful houses and all these nice cars. There was Ferraris, there was Porsches, all driving up and down the street. And I thought, well, what am I doing wrong here?
Yeah, why don't I have one of those?
Yeah, why don't I have this nice house and nice car? And, I quickly started asking around. And there was a lot of business owners there that are maybe their second or third houses. And I thought, this is interesting. And never really been brought up in an environment where you're an entrepreneur.
Uh-huh.
So I got back to Scotland in January. And again, it was pretty miserable, real dark winters there. And I decided, when I was looking out my window one gloomy day with the rains bouncing off the window, I thought, life is too short. I actually had a dual citizenship. So I said, I'm going to pack my bags and move to the States. So in May of 99, I sold my house, I sold my car, quit my job and arrived in the States at Phoenix Airport in May of 99.
I guess we'll get to how you ended up in Greenville. Is that South Carolina or North Carolina?
South Carolina.
Yeah. I was like, I'm in Phoenix. I think I'll go to Greenville. So did you start in the landscaping business? I mean, you were an outdoors guy.
Yeah, I did some really basic jobs at the time. I was replacing sprinkler heads, and then started to work for a large landscape company. Mm-hmm. I did that for a couple of years, but I at the back of my mind, I still had that entrepreneurial spirit, nagging away at me. So after a couple of years of, you know, working early, finishing mid-afternoon, I then started to go out in the afternoons, evenings, and just start to network just to get to know people.
Right.
Yeah. I had nothing. I had no social security number. I had no credit history.
Right. Nothing here.
Nothing there. So eventually, one of those meetings, somebody said, why are you not doing your own business? Why are you not starting your own landscape company? So the ball started to roll from that moment. And I started my own company in May of 2001. And same thing, I was just working out of a lockup in a small truck. I was getting there at 4 o'clock in the morning to beat the heat. And just slowly
at
started
a You mean at a job to do stuff?
Yeah, just at a job and start to cut grass and trim shrubs, doing all the stuff, you know, a landscaper does. And, you know, same thing. When I finished my work, typically by 1:30 in the afternoon, I got home, showered up, freshened up, and then I would go out at night and just meet people and get to business groups.
And were you able to do jobs at 4:30 in the morning? Like in my town, they have like noise ordinances. If you start working like before 7, people like call the police and then, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I had to be careful. I mean, it was a lot of commercial jobs we were working on.
Okay, so it wasn't as much residential.
The lights from the, you know, the parking lots. And I was just selective in what jobs I did, but.
Oh, right, because 4:30 in the morning is probably dark most of the year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's because the earliest it probably was 5:30. Maybe it starts to get a little bit light.
Yeah, I mean, HOAs were restricted by, you know, 7 in the morning or so, but. But yeah, just slowly started to build the business and really focus on a few things. Like, you know, landscapers have a reputation of being, you know, not very professional. You know,
they're not the most reliable.
Yeah, not reliable. You know, not really any uniforms. And I changed all that with my company. I just, you know, nice uniforms, nice trucks. Actually, amazing concept. I'd call people back.
Yeah, that's a unique thing. You know, that's like the number one or two, probably the number one is what they charge, but the number one complaint about lawyers, at least in the United States, is that they don't call people back. I'm like, what do you mean? Then how do you deal with your customers?
Oh no, it just drives me crazy.
I know.
So I think just slowly by building a reputation of the quality and just great customer service, that the business would just start growing and we would keep building. We had an RV lot, and every time we needed a new truck, we would just rent another RV space. And eventually, you know, after 2 or 3 years, we found our own yard. And, you know, sure, you know, long story short, I grew the company to, in 2016, we were doing just shy of 21 million.
In gross sales. Yeah, that's a big landscaping company.
Yeah, we were probably one of the biggest in the Southwest. We had 4 branches in Phoenix metro area and another branch. We expanded up to Vegas.
And most of it was commercial work?
Pretty much all commercial stuff.
Yeah.
So big office buildings, retail, industrial, large HOAs. Sure.
Right. And I guess there's no like snow plowing contract to come with that because no snow. But you can do landscaping all year round as opposed to other places.
That was a nice thing. I mean, we had a couple months of, we were a little bit slower in December, January. But it was nice having that 12 months. And then, you know, the other thing was beneficial is Phoenix is such a hot market right now.
Yeah, right.
It's been growing, you know, for the last 20 odd years. So took advantage of that growth. But
So Phoenix and Scottsdale are in different locations, right? So you were in Scottsdale basically visiting, right? You weren't living here permanently. And then you moved over permanently to Phoenix. Is that how that works?
I mean, it was all
about the same time.
They all merged together. So Scottsdale was attached to Phoenix, attached to Mesa. So I ended up living in Scottsdale, but our yard was down in Tempe, pretty close to the ASU.
Yeah, right. Campus. That's right. Yeah.
And so we pretty much covered the whole valley. I mean, it took an hour to get to one side to the other. And we really just started to dominate the market, all the big classy buildings downtown. And then, you know, part of the reason why we expanded up to Vegas was just to expand our footprint. But a lot of our clients also had properties in different states. So they said, well, come up to Vegas. We need a good landscape company.
Right. Yeah. Because they were, I understand. So they're more regional companies.
Yep.
Yeah. Because you deal with the personal market and the, you know, residential market, the guy has one house, maybe he's got two, but it's probably not nearby. You can't do both of them.
Yeah. Now we had, you know, companies like CB Richard Ellis and So, you know, all these big companies.
Companies and stuff.
Yeah, but, you know, they liked the fact that we had that real professional image.
Yeah.
And just enjoyed dealing with the professionalism. All of our, everything about us was just professional safety, took care of our employees.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it was an industry that you knew, but you also knew what its reputation was. And it wasn't hard to pay attention to details and to be clean and to get some uniform. I'm sure that wasn't a huge investment to do things, to call people back and to, you know, good customer service. And they almost, I think a lot of people in that industry kind of make it easy for you to look good.
Yeah,
because
sure.
they're all just kind of scrappy and stuff like that. So
yeah, I mean, that's just part of my work ethic. I mean, I think coming from Scotland, just having a discipline, just liking to take care of people.
Yeah,
it was just fairly easy for me. But it was hard work, you know, a lot of long days, long hours. But I definitely appreciated the competition giving me an opportunity.
Right, and if I read from your bio, you ended up selling that company, right?
Yeah, I sold it to a large $4 billion company back in 2016. I worked
bigger
for,
commercial company?
Yeah, like actually a global company. They were in the green space, in the green industry. And they were looking for a pillar company out in the West.
Right.
And so I worked for them for a couple of painful years. Really tough.
Yeah, that was part of the deal.
Yeah, part of the deal. And I just really couldn't, after working for myself so long, I couldn't really work for anybody else. And part of the reason why they kept me on was just to look for other companies that we could acquire within our region.
Right. Because it was easier for them. That big of a company, they don't want to start up when they can buy something in a region that's already got customers, right? It's easier for them.
Yeah,
exactly. Okay. So then let's talk about how you kind of transition, because, you know, it's not like you came out of business school and you're like, I'm going to write a business book, whatever. You're learning, which is always the best way, by the way. I hate to say that, but you're learning on the street and you're learning by doing. Because I say we go to school like to learn how to think. Like, we don't really learn, you know, and then you get out into business, you're like, this is nothing. Like, I didn't learn any of this stuff in school. And then you figure it out and you start getting experience and things like that. So let's talk about that, because I know you started other businesses, right? What did you do after the landscaping venture?
After the landscaping, I moved into doing business coaching. So I'm a certified scaling up coach.
Okay.
They were part of the reason why we grew. We had this platform to work to. So I've really had two different.
What's scaling? Who does scaling up?
Vern Harnish.
Okay.
Yeah. So we started off with Traction with Gino Wickman.
Yeah, that's EOS, right?
Yeah. And then we moved up to, we felt as though Vern and the scaling up was just a little bit more heavy in strategy.
Okay.
So I moved into being a coach, and that's what I've been doing really for the last 4 or 5 years. I go into different companies inside and outside the green industry. Work with lawyers or work with contractors, service companies, and just really, you know, by my experience in growing my business and selling it, I'd be able to bring that to other owners who are maybe just stuck in that growth mode. You know, they're still working in the business.
Right.
So I'll just look from a different angle and come up with some suggestions and figure out how we can pull away that, just that stuck they have to take the company to the next level.
Yeah, well, I think that a lot of people get in their own way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like they 100%. Can't pull away and work on the business, and they can't, you know, I mean, you can't tell them, listen, for the next 2 weeks, you can't go to the office. You got to work on the business and let everyone else run the business. And they haven't given up enough control to, or they don't have enough faith in their people, or maybe their people can do it, but they just don't think they can, you know?
Yeah,
definitely,
I think
a big problem.
Ego definitely gets in the way a little bit. So
One
of the things I learned was just you know, if you're hiring the right people, why not empower them to run the business? I mean, they obviously need coaching along the way.
Right.
But, you know, test them out. Give them that power that they can run their own division, run their own branch.
Yeah, if not, what are you doing it all for?
Yeah.
Now, when you work with these people, are you trying to help? Do some of them want to ultimately sell their business? Because I find that a lot of people that grow a business, just one day they're like, oh, I need to sell my business. I want to get out. And they haven't really positioned themselves, you know, and run the business from the standpoint of, I'm going to sell this someday. What they're doing is they're running the business to support their lifestyle, take as much out of the business as they can, haven't really documented much. And then they're scrapping around trying to put it all together, because they have some business broker that told them, oh, you're 75 years old, now you sell the company, and they don't have any of the proper documentation or anything, right?
No, that's so true. I typically work, come in and position it that they're ready to sell at any time. They have some options. So let's build in the processes. Let's build in the systems. Let's build in the right people.
Yeah.
So that once it's running smoothly, somewhat without you, then you've got some options. You can either go off and start enjoying spending time with your family or maybe looking at other ventures.
Right.
And let somebody else run it and just you live off the cash flow. Or you can sell it if you want to, but at least at that point, it's running well. It's probably highly profitable.
Yeah.
And then you've got some options ahead of you.
I think when you start and you're in business, you have this thing in your mind that you always have to work your business. You know, you can't be the guy to just take money out of your business and not do anything. Then you're not contributing and you get it in your head. But if you kind of, you know, if you go in it from business to business, like the people that I know, and you're similar to this too, who are really entrepreneurs, you know, they start a business, they run a business, they sell that business, they start another business. You know, they position it that way. They run their books that way. They keep their employees and their systems in place. But I find that a lot of people are good at they call themselves entrepreneurs, but they're good at like one thing, like figure out how to be a good landscaper, for example, right?
Uh-huh. Yep.
And to run that company. But then they move on to something else and they fall flat on their face because they haven't developed any kind of skills, right, for running a business, which I guess is a lot of what your coaching is and you're helping these people. But that's probably why the failure rate is so high, because the people, you know, some people are successful because they just happen to hit the right thing. They got the experience or whatever. They grew up in that business. Then they want to make a transition or they sell their business, right? And then here you go. You got a pile of cash. And 4 years later, you're out of money because you're doing all these things and you're spinning in circles.
That's true.
You know?
No, I mean, I think you touched on it earlier where a lot of people get into business because of a good trade they have.
Right.
They've never really had any experience at running a business. So yeah, they're running in the business for years, their head's down, they're working in the weeds, and then suddenly they're older, they're tired because they've been working in the business so much.
And then
they try and figure out how they exit. Whereas if you just treat it almost like, well, this is a a means to an end. And and I think that's where I learned along the way when I had my business is that I didn't know enough about business. So I was
right. That was my
next
question for you. Yeah.
I was happy to reduce to throw away my ego and say, hey, I need help with
right. You wanted to learn everything,
expert.
Right?
I that's part of the reason why I joined the EO, the Entrepreneurs Organization, because I wanted to lean on people who'd been doing it for a while.
Did you join that when you had the landscaping company?
I did, early on. Yeah, I've been a part of that group now for 12 years.
Yeah.
And again, it was instrumental with how I looked at my business.
Because you probably very early on stopped like mowing lawns yourself.
Oh, yeah.
You had people that were, you were the business guy. You weren't the lawn mowing guy. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
From a productivity standpoint of business, you're doing $5 work and you're doing $50 an hour work,
No, that's so true. Yeah. I enjoyed it. Sometimes I actually wish I was back on a mower because I had less headaches.
But at least you do it by choice, right? Not because you feel that
choice.
You can't.
Yeah,
yeah. Exactly.
So
well, that's one of the problems. So you feel you learned a lot of that in EO and what other people were doing. That was the valuable part of it.
Yeah, EO was definitely part of it. And then I did bring in different experts. I brought in a fractional CFO.
Yeah.
They helped me out with my financials. I brought in a salesperson just to help dial in my sales process. I almost feel as though I shifted my company from a traditional landscape company to a sales and marketing company.
Right. Well, that's really what companies ultimately that are successful become, right?
Yeah.
I mean, some of them become logistics companies because they're just moving stuff around them. But if you don't, the sales and marketing, you could have the greatest systems and employees in the world. They're all going to be unemployed if you don't have business coming in, if you just mow and lawns. But that's the problem is that the business owner, and the landscaping business is a very good example, feels that he's got to do 80% of the work. So therefore, he should be the one bringing in all the jobs and never pushing a mower if he wants everyone to be successful.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Or if he's not good at selling, then hire a really good salesperson and give them the systems, give them the training to be really successful. But it takes you having to take a step back
Right.
And look at your business, or maybe it's a mentor who's giving you a nudge and seeing how to improve, how to scale up.
Yeah. So what, I'm jumping around a little bit, but what are the things that you think and that you see? Because you're obviously coaching people now. You recognize the value of coaches and other professionals early on in your business, which is definitely an oversight for a lot of business owners. Some of them figure it out. Some of them never figure it out, but you know, the best coaches have their own coach. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, what kind of mistakes do you see other business owners making, the ones that you're working with, in terms of running their businesses?
Probably the first one is just get out of their own way first.
Trying to do too many things themselves.
Yeah, trying to do too many things, yeah. Working in the weeds. I think the next one is, you know, hiring people that are almost better than you.
Yeah. You do want to hire people that are better than you, right?
You do want to hire them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
So we'll find out really good salespersons.
Like the wrong people. I think we're all very bad at choosing, because I think inherently we're like good at heart. We trust people generally, you know, because you're dealing with customers, you want to be customer folks. And that makes us bad at picking people to come work for us in a lot of cases, right? I did it when I had a law firm. I picked all the wrong people, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I really preach this a lot, that you want to find those A players.
Yeah.
Who are going to enhance your culture and really just work hard and have, you know, knowledge of technology and how to take the company to the next level.
Yeah.
And then, but coach them. Coach and mentor them along the way, develop their leadership skills. I think once you bring those right people in, a lot of people just say, no, I've done my job, just leave them to it. But those people need constant leadership training and development. So again, I do that with a lot of my clients, is that I'll go in and coach their executive team to again, begin to take off some of the weight off the owner.
Right. I think a common problem in businesses is that as they grow, they end up with people that are, maybe they were in the right place to start because you were a small company, right? And now your person who's the office manager is your bookkeeper, and she's got really not good financial skills. Mm-hmm. And the person who's handling sales and marketing, he's not the best salesperson. And, you know, and you get these silos, and then they stop communicating with each other because they're not good at what they do. So nobody wants to be found out, so to speak. And it's a huge problem. It's a huge problem even recognized, like what's wrong and what, you know, because you don't know what's going on. It's kind of hiding a little bit because they're, you don't want to be found out, so to speak.
That
you're not
true.
Good at what you do. Like, you think you're going to lose your job, right?
Yeah, they almost hide in the system.
Yeah.
You know, they just, their heads down and look as though they're busy and you think they're doing a great job. But that's one of the first things I do, is I go into a company and I do some evaluations to figure out who are the A, B, and C players.
Right.
And then once we establish who those people are, then we'll really clarify the roles within the company.
Uh-huh.
And then the third piece to that is establishing, you know, their key performance indicators. What are the things that we can hold them accountable for?
Mm-hmm.
And then just sit back and watch them.
Yeah. Well, now you've given them a different playing field. So, yep. You know, that's definitely a huge problem.
You empower them. You give them enough, you know, rope to be successful, hopefully. And again, go in and coach them and help them and tweak, you know, things along the way. Don't leave it till the end of the year when you do their annual review. Constantly talk to them on
damage.
A daily, weekly basis.
Yeah, I remember I was a company I was dealing with where there was a couple of different business processors. I forget what industry they were in, insurance or something. And one of the women went on a maternity leave, and she was more the senior person and whatever. So this other person that they felt was very competent would take over a lot of the work. So, and even maternity leave, 3 months, whatever, 4 months. So about halfway through, the boss is getting calls from people. Hey, you know, you call and Robert calls me, Mitch, you know, what's going on? I haven't heard back. We're waiting on that, whatever was to be processed or delivered or whatever. So one day he's like looking through everything, and you know, those cubicles where they have the overhead, you know, bins that flip up and you, right. He opens it up and all the files from the company they're being processed are like stuffed in there. Like the woman had like a nervous breakdown. It was too overwhelming for her. And instead of asking for help, she didn't want to ask anybody. She thought she'd get fired. So, I mean, it's a little silly. You'd think somebody's going to eventually figure this out. And all these files had not been worked on. They were all stuffed in there.
Just stuffed them in and just hope nobody would realize.
And it looked like she was on top of everything because her desk was clean. Everything was neat. And they opened the thing up and there were all these files that were stuffed up in there.
Unbelievable.
And he felt really bad. He had to let her go. I think years later, he actually hired her back for some other, you know, job, but not for, it was not. And it was not a good way to find out either.
No, that's funny. I heard a slightly different story, same scenario there, where the lady went on maternity leave, the replacement came in and was starting doing the job in half the time.
Discovered that the first person wasn't good at it.
Yeah, they just had better systems and processes and just a lot more efficient. And they start to take on more properties. It was just like eye-opening to the owners.
Yeah, I think you do have to kind of test your employees all the time. And it's not like they're going to get fired. They're going to do better if they're in the right, you know, position.
Yeah.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's L-A-W to 21000 to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
I also find that, you know, when somebody's like the office, like that's the first person in the door, you're there, they're your assistant, they're the office manager, they're moving up. They want to keep control over all these things. And you get to the point where you're so dependent on them that you almost have to say, listen, we're going to pay you, but why don't you go away for 30 days and let's see if the company falls apart, right? And if you can figure out how to do everything without them, you come back, you make them the president. That's fine. But, you know, you got to get people to be less, because people also, they're going to, if she's going to take the work or he, they're going to do it. Like people will offload that work on somebody if they're willing to take it. And if they don't, never say no.
Yeah.
And the owners do that thing too.
Yeah. I mean, there's a saying out there. I don't know if it was Jim Collins or somebody else saying that the people that typically get to you to where you are,
yeah,
are not necessarily the same people to take you to the next level.
Right. Well, because it's a different skill set. Like the skill set to start a business and to run a business and to start to grow a business is a different skill set than when you become basically the executive, right? That's supposed to manage people and you run all the and keep an eye on things. And it's just a different skill. That's what happens with these large corporations, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen so many companies where the CEO was the founder and they threw him out. Maybe he came back later on, right? That was like Apple, they did that. And yeah, a bunch of companies, but it happens in the micro level too.
No, I agree 100%.
And, you know, but the problem with the micro level is there's no board of directors to throw out the owner and say, hey, this is not your skill set. You're on your own unless they nice enough to meet, lucky enough to meet, you know, guys like you who are going to evaluate things. So can you think of some other companies in that you work with that were pretty sharp and that you were pretty impressed with, you know, how they'd run and where they'd gotten to?
Yeah, I mean, I there's one company I'm working with right now, and you know, it's an interesting story. Went from, you know, probably 8 million maybe a year and a half ago. This year they'll do 37 million.
Wow.
So tremendous growth. But you know, he came to me and he was just like, oh, I want to get out of this. I'm working too long hours. I'm stressed. My family's not seeing me. I've never really, you know, I think he'd only worked in a company up to $1 million before.
Right. So this is when he was just, doing 8 million, right?
Yeah. And he was just totally out of his depth. So, you know, by now working with him for the last year and a half, you know, we've brought in a COO to help out. We've brought in some systems, processes. We've, you know, replaced some of the people that needed to be replaced. And now he's loving life. He's now spending, probably going on vacation with his family now every 2 or 3 weeks. He's only working 25, 30 hours a week. Just in a lot better place now. Now he has some options because now he's got all these people running his company. So, right. You know, he's only maybe 40.
Oh,
so
yeah.
He's still got, still got a lot of years, but there's people now, you know, knocking down his door because they want to buy his company because he's built such a great company now. He's got a real niche.
Right, now he's
market.
Got value that he
built. Yeah, so he's in a really good place. So that's people who I really enjoy working with who've allowed me to come in, they've listened and
really transformed.
Yeah.
So there was a guy who just needed to work less and his sales tripled.
Yeah.
And more full, fivefold.
Yeah. And just, bringing in, holding him accountable, really dialing in the processes. And he's in a great place right now.
Now, what industry is his company in?
He does plastics. So plastic distribution.
That they're selling to like extrusion companies or things like that.
Yeah, like chemical companies and petroleum companies. And it's a great little business.
So let's talk about your business because you sold the company and now you mostly do coaching. Do you have other ventures that you're invested in the companies that you have?
Yeah. So I have a couple of franchise ventures. I have
locations
up in
as a franchisee.
But also a regional developer as well.
Oh, okay.
So regional developer for The Joint, which is the chiropractic franchise, and also modern acupuncture.
Uh-huh.
So we have now, I believe, 7 units up around Seattle.
Right. But you signed a franchise agreement that was a development deal that said, listen, you have to develop out a certain amount of offices. Yeah.
Exactly.
Got it.
Okay. So I had that now for, I think, three and a half years. I've got quite a few investments in real estate, a lot of apartments around the country. So
different parts of the country, not just out west.
In Arizona and South Carolina and Tennessee. So different parts of the country. In fact, even one deal in Spain.
Oh, okay.
And then different other tech companies are involved with a smaller level. So I suppose
that's more like venture capital type of stuff.
Yeah, venture capital stuff. So, but I just love being part of businesses and just see the growth and wherever I can go in and help with my knowledge and my expertise.
Yeah.
So that they make less mistakes, then it means a lot to me.
Okay. So I want to get back to like how you started the coaching business and how you, built that. But I do want to get the answer to the question. So how did you end up in Greenville, North Carolina?
South Carolina.
So
when I sold the business, I just thought, now I have some options. I've got a young family. I've got 3 young kids.
Okay.
And I thought, Arizona is pretty brutal on, young kids and playing outdoors, especially in the summer. So we just looked around.
When they're off of school. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So we looked at probably 5 or 6 places all around the world, including back in Europe. We looked at Colombia, South America. We looked at
You had sold your company, you weren't tied anywhere.
Yeah, I had a lot of options, and we thought traveling abroad with young kids would probably be a bit too much for them.
Right.
So we had some family in South Carolina, and it seemed to
that's
check
a good
all
answer.
The, yeah, it seemed yeah. to check all the boxes. It's closer for me to get back to the UK.
Yeah.
So a little bit.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So we moved here 3 years ago, and I love it.
I don't know if it still is, but I think there was a time when Greenville was like the sales capital of the world. Like they had more sales conventions in Greenville, I think, than anywhere in the United States. I'm pretty sure that's true. I don't know. Do they still have a lot of like those kind of things there?
I haven't heard that, but, we used to be the textile capital of the world.
Okay.
So a lot of textile industries, a lot of them are now defunct. But, we now have the headquarters for BMW here. The ships all around the world. We have Michelin headquarters here. So a lot of big industries. And it's probably been named in one of the top 5 fastest growing small cities in the country.
Yeah, I know there's a handful of them. And the cost of living's lower than up in the Northeast or the West Coast. And you get a much more high quality of life. I know a lot of industries from up here. I've moved down to North Carolina, South Carolina. I've had friends move to Savannah and Charleston, and although that's hot and there too.
Yeah,
or Atlanta or whatever. Yeah. No, I hear that.
I love it. It's nice and green, and you know, we get the four seasons now, which is pretty nice.
Yeah, because Greenville's inland more, right?
Yeah. It's about 4 hours from the coast.
Yeah, so you're getting all the seasons and stuff.
Yeah.
But not too brutal.
We don't get the two crazy hurricanes come through. So
you do? You've had some hurricanes?
We get the tail end of it, but you know,
not really.
We'd like to be in the coast.
Yeah, no. I mean, they say one of the biggest cities that are growing is like Houston and Austin. I mean, great, but you're in Texas, so
yeah,
right in the path. Well, and Nashville's supposed to be a hot town too.
Yeah, well, look what happened to Houston 6 months ago.
Yeah,
with that cold snap.
Yeah. Well, also the whole state of Texas, they like act like they're a separate country.
Yeah.
They like disconnect. They got real ridiculous rules down there. They basically have their own grid. And then if they had all kinds of problems with the rates went up, I think it was like $800. If your bill is $80 that month, it was $800 the next month. And yeah, it's not so thing. There's some weird rule. You got to do some research on this, but there's some weird ruling from like 100 years ago that Texas, and they still have the right to do this, but I don't think they ever would, could secede from the United States and become its own country. There was some lawsuit or something. I listened to some history podcast.
I want to check out.
And they interviewed this professor from one of the universities. And at the end, the guy says, so basically if Texas wanted to, they could break up from the United States. He goes, yeah, technically they could, but you know, they're not going to do it, but that's the way they act there. Okay. So you sold your company, you hadn't started coaching or anything yet before you moved. You basically had a pile of cash and you said, let's relocate. You go to Greenville. And then how did you start getting, you know, coaching? You don't just call your friends and say, hey, I want to coach you. How'd you what was the process?
Yeah, I just started to reach out to my network. I'd really built a good network through my business, through my EO network. Mm-hmm. And just started to reach out to people. And, you know, once I got the first couple of clients,
then
I started to get more referrals.
Yeah.
So that definitely helped build my coaching practice. So, yeah, I have the coaching practice. I also have a bunch of peer groups all in the green industry.
That are kind of like advisory board type.
Just like advisory.
Round table.
Round tables.
Is that kind of how EO works? Are you like, do you have groups in EO and you're kind of like
groups,
advisory board?
Anywhere from 7 to 9 people per group, different industries.
Okay.
It's just nice and having that board of directors just to make sure that you're going down the right path.
No, I'm a big proponent. I write and I talk about advisory boards all the time. Even if you're a small company, maybe you don't qualify for some of these organizations, you know, get 2 or 3 people that'll meet with you quarterly who you trust and who you call on anyway, and use that process of having people outside your business that have a clear head, you know, for your business. In EO, are there, what puts the groups together? Like what's makes, why are they on that particular 9 group round table, whatever?
Yeah, they just, a lot of groups, so either they'll assign new members into those groups that are needing some, or some just work together because they're all slightly different industries. You want to make sure there's no competing businesses.
Yeah. People don't want to share things about.
Yeah, and they've got to make sure, you know, they're fit culturally and they work together. Because, you know, you're not only talking about business in those groups, you're talking about like personal and family stuff.
Yeah, it's
as
like
well.
Therapy, right?
So, yeah, I mean, it almost becomes your new set of best friends that you're with for years and you go on some trips together.
Yeah.
But I've now part of 2 groups and now been part of that organization for 12
years. You're still an active member.
Yeah, well, yeah, very much so. Yeah, I just started a new chapter in the East region. All the members that are all virtual and traveling a lot.
Right.
So we're now up to 41 members.
For the chapter.
For the chapter.
And that makes like 10 or like 4 or 5 groups.
Yeah, 4 or 5 groups, yeah.
Right. So you originally were doing it out in Arizona.
Great.
And you continued it when you moved.
There. Yeah. And I just became part of the region here. And there's a regional management level. So I became part of that. And then they asked me to start a new chapter.
Right.
It's quite heavy lifting.
To start the chapter. So you did it like they asked you to do it?
Yeah.
So you had to start from scratch. And so, wasn't there there wasn't an EO chapter in where you are?
Well, the nearest one is
more of a regional thing.
Yeah, there's a one in Charlotte and another one in Atlanta. We're just a little bit too far to travel to the event. So they said, well, since you're a Libet, you know, you've been a member for a long time, there's a need for that virtual chapter. So we now have these 41 members made up with a lot of people in the Eastern region, or some in the Central region. But we also have members, there's one from Hong Kong, there's one from South America.
In your chapter.
In my chapter, because they come here in virtually. The East Coast, even travel when they're back.
Oh, sometimes they do? Okay.
Because they do business here.
Because they do business in that part of the world.
Yeah.
I got it. Okay. So, and I know I'm taking up a lot of your time, but I appreciate it. Let's talk about like some of the things. If you were going to talk to a business owner, let's assume he's not your coaching client yet, right? What's the two or three things, advice that you would give them, you know, that they have to pay attention to? Like, for example, one of the things, I don't want to steal one of your items, but, you know, as an attorney, as a business attorney, I'm always harping on people to put things in writing, whether it's a business plan, your client agreement, you know, your partnership agreement, because they always lead to problems when you don't have things in writing. So what are the kind of things that you're telling people to do or to know or to think about to be successful in their business?
I'd start off with the people part. Make sure that you have the right people in place.
Okay, good advice.
And you're taking care of them. And along those same lines, making sure you've got a great company culture, you know, and you're doing things to enhance that culture, whether it be company events.
Right. That they like, that is a place that they want to work and want to be, look forward to coming to work every day.
Yeah. Because, you know, especially when you go through some challenging times or, you know, there's such a demand for labor right now.
Yeah.
It's really easy to move to another, you know, company for a few dollars more, but if you've built that amazing culture,
people are more loyal.
They're going to be loyal. It's going to carry you through some of those challenges.
Sure.
So really working the people, working the culture. And then, you know, one of the hot buttons right now, I feel, is, you know, your pricing. I think a lot of people are not quite realizing that because of all the increases in costs with either labor, your staff, and all some of your raw materials, then they're not looking at their own pricing and making those adjustments.
Yeah, they don't realize that their margins are shrinking.
Yeah.
And they're going to get in trouble.
Yeah. So a lot of companies now are, you know, looking to prepare their pricing for 2022.
Right.
So why not start looking at that now, looking at how much things are costing them?
Yeah.
You know, do some job costing on their different jobs or clients and start to think about, well, whether I need to increase it next year, is it 3%, is it 5%, 10%? What does that look like?
Yeah, I think that's one of the hardest things for a smaller entrepreneur, you know, maybe has a few employees, but not a big company, is that they tend, you know, as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, and as a creator, because you're building businesses too, right? We tend to be more right brain than we are left brain.
Yeah.
So a lot of people, like they shy away from really knowing their numbers. Like the most successful business owners I know, whether they're, you know, small scale or large scale, I mean, they know their numbers, they know their price, and they know that if they get another three jobs, that's when they can add three more employees or whatever. And I think that's a huge problem in that people have to become a little bit better at knowing their numbers, because if you get a pandemic like this, right, cash flow hides a lot of things. And when it stops, you're like, holy shit, I wasn't making any money from this business. It was just getting me by from week to week, month to month. And I think that's a good, you know, it's a good point that you're making, because if you don't know your numbers, you can't even, you're guessing at your pricing.
Yep.
So and there's a lot of industries that are putting a lot of price pressure on their supplies. Sometimes they don't have to, by the way. There's not shortages everywhere, but they're still, everybody's raising their prices to you. True. So you got to raise your price to them.
Absolutely. And some people are afraid of having that difficult conversation.
Yeah.
Because a lot of, you know, a lot of the clients have been with them for years.
Right.
And they don't want to have that tough conversation. But you know, if you truly don't know your numbers, then don't bury your head in the sand.
Yeah.
Bring an expert in. If you have to pay,
right,
you know, a fractional CFO or a few $1,000s to, you know, look at your numbers, then do that, because it could be costing you 10
times.
You
could save the amount that the cost you for the person.
Totally.
Yeah. No, I think that's so true. And I think that when, you know, when it comes down to it, people, they're just, you know, they're just guessing at things, and it really leads to well, it leads to failure sometimes. I mean, that's, you know, that's what happens. I've had people call me and they're like, you know, I'm the lawyer, right? So they'll be like, Mitch, it's Robert. I'm like, hey, Robert, how's business going? I think I got to close the store. Didn't you tell me you just opened like 4 or 5 months ago? Yeah, but you know, we didn't realize we're coming into the winter. We didn't plan on this. Then the prices went up and we did. Well, how did you fix your prices? I don't know. We saw what other people were charging, whatever. And they're not even sure why it's struggling. And it's just really, yeah. I mean, that's a good lesson for people to learn is know your numbers or find somebody to teach you the numbers.
Yeah. Especially now, you know, this prices are growing. I mean, you even see it personally, if you're going to grocery store or you're buying food or.
Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, I think the hesitancy to raise your prices is more in your head because your customers realize everyone else is raising their prices.
I know.
They're probably wondering, why aren't you raising your prices?
I know.
You know, I mean, I have attorneys that haven't raised their fees in years and they're like, well, you know, I feel bad charging my clients for this. And I said, well, how about you feel bad not helping your family that you work hard for? I had a friend I was talking to, and after the conversation, she's like, you know what? I'm gonna raise all my prices, $25 across the board. And she did, and she felt good about it. And not anybody even blinked.
Yeah.
Not anybody.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you're right. It's all up in the head. All up in the head.
Yeah. And that's why sometimes you need somebody who's not in, you know, who's what's the word, objective about everything and can, it doesn't affect you. If you tell them, listen, now you ought to raise your prices. You're not worrying about upsetting their customers. They are, but you're not, you don't even know them.
Yeah. So well, you touched on this earlier that when you look at most of the successful people, either in business or in sports, you know, the Michael Jordans, the, you know, the Googles, the, you know, Steve Jobs, they all had coaches. Because they all had somebody who was just nudging them, who was holding them accountable and just basically speaking the truth, because ultimately they wanted what was best for them and the company.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't care. Even if you're Michael Jordan, he knew, as good as he was, that he couldn't do it on his own, you know, practice. But you need somebody to say, hey, you know, you're off a little bit, or you're standing the wrong way, you're holding the club wrong, or whatever sport you're in. But you know, there's something that I got to get this off my chest. There's something that is bothering me about what's going on, not just in America, but in the world, is that you see these large corporations and they are, because you talked about culture before and wanting people to work there, making sure in the right position. We have this movement in the large corporate marketplace to, like, you know, efficiency and profitability, and we're gutting the middle and upper middle class where in the 70s, let's say, when our parents were working, you could go work for a company like Disney or whatever, and you could actually buy a house and send your kids to school and pay for whatever you need to pay for. And now you work at Disney, want to make sure you don't work 25 hours so they don't have to put you on the benefits. And there's no retirement and there's no pension and they don't pay for your health insurance. And it's impossible. So not only is it very expensive to live and cost of and everything else going the other way. So you have to do more with less. And that's how societies collapse, like in history, when there's too big of a separation from, you know, the guy who's worth $100 billion, you don't have to say his name, who probably doesn't need $100 billion, who has people that can't take a piss because they got to work on the floor and get the things filled.
Oh, I know. Yeah,
that's absurd.
It is absurd.
That is absolutely absurd. Nobody should be. And I'm not, look, don't get me wrong, I'm not a socialist. And, you know, but anything in the, like, socialism in extreme is capitalism, didn't really go too well. You take capitalism in an extreme, right? You go to, like, even in Russia, right, where capitalism is basically rooted and but all the rich people are taking advantage of the entire system because it's not regulated.
Yeah, that's so true.
What happens? Yeah. So it's there's a balance. And I think that it would be nice. I'm not saying the government should regulate everything, but I think it would be nice if larger companies started acting like the people that work there mattered more, because you and I know, you can't automate everything, right? So if you take all the people out of the equation, even the customers, right? You don't have a company. Mm-hmm. Doesn't exist, doesn't have products, doesn't. And I think that a lot of at the upper echelon of societies in different countries, very wealthy, have forgotten that. They just, it's profitability for them.
No,
even in the Far East, you know?
Yeah. You've got to take care of their employees. And it needs to start happening. 100%. Yeah.
And you don't have to, you can't take your money with you. So you don't have to, you know, be constantly making money, you know, like, I mean, I don't have any idea, but did Disney have to lay off 32,000 people during the pandemic? Probably not, but it would have affected their profit. Maybe they would have made no profit. Maybe they would have lost money. I don't, but you know, I mean, health insurance companies, they're not going out of business. They were paying for all this stuff and these tests and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, definitely. It's just a shame. And I think it's going to fall on your kids, going to fall on my kids. Your kids are younger, right? Mine are like in high school.
Yeah, my twins are seven and I've got 9-year-olds.
So, I mean, look, it's gotten harder for us than they're going to inherit all this stuff, you know, and they're going to have to live in a world that is, you know, is different. But I mean, they're being educated differently. They're going to learn skills that are different, that are more towards a technologically based society, not an industrial society. The people that are 55 and 65 that are have different skills, they're not going to learn.
How
to program in Python.
That's
not gonna happen. And you know what? They probably had about 10 years to like ease out of it, but the pandemic pushed all technology now.
Accelerated things by 10 years.
Yeah.
And that's I think that's part of the reason why people are struggling to find employees because of that whole
I got friends that own restaurants, the people won't come back to work.
Yeah.
It's crazy right now. Yep, and I think, you know, I think that if you have, I don't know how old your age range is, the people you coach, but the ones that are, you know, nearing the end of their road and they want to sell or they want to move on or retire, work less, they probably never thought in their life that they would have to be on Zoom, like talking to people.
That's true.
You know, my dad's 78 years old. He says, I don't want to know this stuff.
I know.
But he's forced to.
I'm forced to, I mean, it's I feel bad for all these people.
It's hard. They'll adjust, but some people are going to get crushed in the mechanism. That's what happens.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people suffering with, you know, different types of mental challenges.
After the
last 18 months. So, it's pretty brutal.
Yeah, so you worked mostly from, you were in Greenville then, so that's where you were holed up.
Yeah, I'm holed up here. I still traveled. I think as of August last year, I was probably traveling once a month.
Like on airplanes?
I just
there was probably nobody on the plane, right?
Nobody on the plane, so I felt pretty safe. I made sure I was super safe.
You were careful, right? Of course.
Yeah, but I was all around the country, and it was actually I enjoyed it because it was nice just getting a different scenery.
And probably easy to travel, right?
Yeah, easy to travel, but the last films of the last month. It's totally changed overnight. Airports are busier.
There's people on the road now.
Yeah, but the interesting about the airports is that you start seeing lines at all the restaurants because they don't have the staff to handle all the travelers.
There are restaurants all over my town. I said, when are you going to open? You're just doing takeout. They said, I can't get people to like wash dishes and mop the floor because they're on unemployment and they're making about what they were making before and they have no motivation to come back.
Yeah.
You know?
I heard a stat this morning saying that if you have a husband and wife and then two older kids all on unemployment, they could be making 75,000-80,000 a year.
Yeah, more than they were making before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the incentive to go back?
There's no incentive. And it's not like, and they were probably paying for their health insurance to begin with. So it's not like they just go buy other health insurance.
Yeah.
It wasn't like they were getting benefits. So it's a very, very big problem. I've a client of mine owns a diner. It's a Greek family. And we hadn't been there in a while, but we did takeout, whatever. So we go the other day and I said, tell Jimmy that, you know, we're here. He comes out of the kitchen. He looked like a wreck because every day he comes in, he doesn't know what he's got to do. He's got to cook. He's got to do dishes. Somebody's not showing up. And he's just putting out fires. And he's not alone. He's the whole family that works there. They're running around like chickens with their head cut off. And, you know, and it's just, I don't know, like everything else is going to play out. Then we're going to see what happens in the fall. If there's some sort of an uptick because, you know, booster, you know, whatever, your vaccine wears off, it's like the flu. It's not going to cover you forever.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
But on your point, I mean, your friend probably was super stressed going through the whole COVID and being locked down. So, you think now, business is picking up. It's going to become a little bit easier. But in your case, he's almost working harder now. So
because all of his guys were low paid.
Yeah.
They're all, you know, the waiters, the waitresses, the busboys, whatever.
Yeah.
They'd rather sit home and make the same money. Why, you know?
I think we'll see a lot of businesses that are either go out of business or sell over the next 6 months to a year.
Yeah. So, no, I have transactions going on there for guys who have money, and I'm not talking large, $3 to $5 million transactions. There are opportunities definitely to buy businesses. To retool the business, but it's got to be the kind of business that you can learn retool it so you don't need the kind of labor that you need before, just in case, because it might not have it.
Use technology and so.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Robert, I appreciate you coming on with me and telling me your story and sharing your ideas and thoughts. What's the way for people to follow you, interact with you?
Yeah, no, thank you. People can contact me through my website, theradixgroup.com.
Okay.
They can go to my LinkedIn profile, Robert Klinkenbeard, super active. They can go in and get my book. Either way, I've got the Ironman Mindset for Entrepreneurs. So,
okay. And really your good. Podcast is up my in the
podcast,
corner there.
Yeah, the Commercial Landscapers podcast. And so, yeah, I'm all over social media and I'd love to talk to anybody. Even if somebody just wants to reach out and chat for a little bit, I'm happy to share my experiences. So
fantastic.
Thank you, Mitch.
I appreciate it. And we'll put all those links in the show notes so people don't have to write it down while they're driving if they're listening to this.
Yes.
And take care and have a good weekend.
You too. Thank you.
All right, Robert. Thanks.
Okay. Cheers.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.